Hey Paisanos, and welcome to the Love Song Book Club podcast, number 2. I'm your host, Aspiety, and I'm joined today by the boisterous Bionic.
Yeah.
Why'd we start with Bionic?
Why did you start with Bionic?
Very boisterous Bionic.
Mm.
The brilliant Biscuiter?
Yeah, that's right.
Question mark.
Oh, ow.
The dainty Dungo Daikasaku.
Yep.
And the crazy Kuketsuki Miu.
Hi, hi.
And here we are to...
Can't write crazy with a K.
Yeah, you can. Are you kidding me?
No.
Man, this podcast is way too high energy for what we're about to talk about.
I can bring it down for everybody, don't worry about it.
Good, I'll be relying on you.
I'm excited to be not excited.
Now, this week we're going to be talking about Bokuro no Koi, Hayu no Hane, Gramophone, and Shinwa. Now, this is episode 2 of the Love Song Book Club podcast, so if you haven't listened to episode 1, please go back to that and we'll give you everything you need to join in now. So, let's jump right in with Bokuro no Koi.
Our love.
Our love. This is a cool song. This is, definitely,
this is... good. This is good.
This was probably just my favorite of this week's.
It may be my favorite so far. I really dig the story they've got going, and like, there's so much. Well, like every song, there's so much to analyze and like bring out of it. Even the illustration has me thinking quite a lot. How the boy is looking upon the painted ocean with the girl seemingly a part of the painting now. There's a lot to go off here. I don't know where to start. I guess, like...
That illustration is super spoopy, by the way. Just throwing that out there. I did not actually notice the fact that the girl is, like, in the painting.
Yeah.
For forever until you mentioned it. Like, I always thought that the... Like, that scan of that picture was just, like, kind of old. But it's actually, like, a crack in the painting. And I'm like, oh my god, this is amazing.
Yeah. No, it's, There's a lot to take out of this. Should we start getting into theories, or do you just want to talk? I want to hear what people think of this song first.
Well, what'd you guys rate it on our ratings button poll thingy?
I rated it a 4. I thought it was pretty good.
I see Mew's ready for this podcast.
I gave it a 5. I think the song is mad good.
It is.
I'm very stingy with my 5s, so I will only give a 5 to what ends up being my very favorite song on the album, probably.
I think I almost gave it a 4, but I was like, you know what, I really like it, so I just gave it 5.
Bionic, what'd you rate it?
I gave it a 4 because I enjoy all of the songs from this album, so pretty much most of them got 4s. Hashiru got a 5 because it's my personal favorite, but yeah, this one got a 4.
It's unfortunate we don't have Pi here to talk about all the music analysis.
I can give you, like, some things about how I feel about the music overall, but I'm not going to be able to give you, the terminology and the professional perspective that he would be able to.
All right. How does this...
There are some things...
How does this make you feel, Biz?
Well, first of all, we need to ask Dongo when he rated it.
Oh, sure. I rated it a 4. I like the sound, but to me, it didn't really have that wow factor. For me, the wow factor came from track 5, really. But not really this. The lyrical content, though, I really like. I really enjoyed digging into this one. It didn't leave me utterly baffled like Gramophone or Shinwa. I feel like I actually... kind of get it, especially after everyone else contributed too. That also helped a lot. But I feel like even on like a first read through, it kind of there was a narrative in my head that I could actually follow.
Same thing.
I really like that about this book. This book club so far is I'm very happy with the idea that everyone's actually pooling ideas together and people are like figuring things out themselves from other people's perspectives and then also being able to add their own and like kind of creating a much more cohesive thing, because I think that's pretty important whenever you have something to this kind of There's a lot of perspective, basically, as far as how you could take a lot of the stuff from these songs. So that's cool, and I like that that's working out that way. As far as the music's concerned, I can kind of feel what you mean about how it's not like a wow factor kind of thing with this song, because it's pretty long, and the progression that it has doesn't really kind of explode anywhere. It kind of progresses very slowly throughout the entirety of, like, it's like almost 7 minutes, I think.
Yep.
So, like, it very, very slowly progresses, and it's very subtle how it does. There's a lot of layers, and, like, the complexity of the actual tracking just kind of keeps going up as the song continues, which is cool, because it continues this kind of anxious feeling that a lot of the music kind of gives off this album. One of the cool things is, like, obviously it's got that that same little piano ditty going through, like, the whole song, the do-do-do-do, right? That kind of goes on and on. And what's cool is, like, as it progresses and you start getting, like, the synth and more of the strings coming in between each of the big vocal segments, that actually goes away for, like, the first kind of progression, and you don't even notice that it's gone. Because it just kind of flows so nice with all the other accompaniments going on. And then in the second progression, like, later in the song, it actually is fading in and out in the background along with all of the other backtracking going on. So, like, there's a lot of complexity with this track, and that makes this track specifically, along with the next track, actually, are, like, the two songs that I really wish I had this album in, like, a FLAC format, because I would really like to be able to hear those intricacies in this track, because there's a lot of complexity going on with this, with lots of different instruments. Yeah, the synth definitely progresses a lot as well as you go on, and it's cool because when you get to the end of the track, everything kind of comes out at once, where, like, you have kind of the light tones of the piano and the more subdued stuff that kind of goes in between. And then, because everything's going at once, Rhea, like, she actually sings a lot louder towards the end, and it kind of climaxes really nicely, as it kind of comes to the revelation of what the song is actually about. So we should probably talk about what the song is about, to explain why that's, like, really important.
Mm-hmm. So we have the story about a boy who is painting a ocean on a wall, and after a while, more and more people join in. It kind of gives me a feeling of Tomoyo After almost. And then he seems to end up falling for this girl. And then they're painting the wall together and something happens. They describe it as, what was it like, the painting being dyed red?
Oh, that was before all the people joined together.
Was it?
I think.
Yeah.
I'm getting the order of the
things. It is.
But yeah, something happens, and then the boy is left alone to finish the painting on his own. It's a basic gist of the plot, I think.
Yeah, it's like, it's a boy who starts, they translated it with the word graffiti. I didn't actually look at that literally. Did anybody look at that word?
Yeah,
I
looked
at it. The word is rakugaki, which basically means simple drawing. It does not mean, yeah, it could be like a sketch, it just is kind of a careless
could
drawing.
We presume that because it's like on a wall in what we assume is kind of a public space that it could be considered as a graffiti? Like,
I'm guessing that's why they went with graffiti, and I mean, it doesn't not make sense.
Okay, so we can assume that that's like a fair assumption. I wanted to go over that because I wanted to kind of draw from that as far as like what I think this song is kind of saying, and I feel like that's an important thing to try to take from it, so I'm gonna go with it. If it's wrong, then it's wrong, but we're not gonna be able to know, really. So, like, the gist of our story here is a lot like what Aspie said. You have a boy who starts a painting, and then a girl comes along, and they start to paint together, but then for some reason they're not able to actually complete what it is that they're doing, and then you have this realization at the end of the song that it's actually a story being told from a future perspective, and the boy is actually there finishing that painting many seasons later, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of an important part of that whole crescendo of the actual music. And it kind of ends on a really sour note, because he doesn't seem too happy about finishing it, because he's like, the boy is like super sad about it, right?
He cried because, unstoppably, and there was no one in his ocean.
Yeah, it's like, it's interesting that the song actually, I don't know if anyone else noticed, but like, you have this, there's a really cool transition from the previous track into this track where there's like a sound of, it sounds like a shore.
Oh yeah.
And this track ends with that as well, but before it goes back to that, it cuts out all the other music and it just goes back to that basic kind of piano track where it's just kind of a little piano track. But the piano actually, instead of like kind of trailing off naturally in a way that you'd expect it to, it actually ends really sour and it's like kind of like a brrrr, and then it ends and goes back into the water, which is pretty cool because it's kind of indicative of how the song doesn't really end in a happy manner. I guess I want to pose the question of like where do you think we are? Like, let's talk about the setting here for a little bit. So Helios brought up a lot of interesting ideas about this actually that I think it'll be fun to talk about. Like, where are we and why are we painting on this wall? Is this an institute of some sort? Is it like a school? Yeah. Or like where are
we? Me and Helios were talking about this a bit on voice. And we kind of reached the conclusion that this might be a hospital, or at least some kind of institution for disadvantaged kids in some way.
And, like, I wanted to ask that question because I feel like that question came about whenever we were talking about, that people were talking about the idea of how this, they mentioned the other people, and, like, there are other people who are present in this that are also, like, taking part in this drawing, right? And, like, it specifies that these people are all people who have also lost something,
yeah,
or that have lost something, and that the boy himself hasn't lost anything because his position is he's like, I haven't even gained anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, who are the other people? Does anybody have any ideas?
I mean, like, when I first read this, I was kind of fixated on the graffiti thing, and I thought, I mean, this is a group of delinquents, you know? Just, like, okay, trying to find their place in life. But then, when I heard Hidas's theory, I kind of fell more into that.
Anybody else got anything?
At this point, not really particularly creative, but when I wrote my post, especially the later one, I ended up basically subscribing to that. What really sells it for me is this line in particular. Even though I know from the very beginning that we live to be broken, to be hurt, mm-hmm, and to lose, and yeah, this just comes just before we find out that the community's like splitting apart and no one's continuing the painting but him.
Mm-hmm.
So I really thought that gels well with the general feeling of this song, where everyone feels jaded to a degree,
yes,
but they're all able to bond on this painting of this ocean, this almost a paradise of sorts that feels a lot better than where they are now. So it's not the most original of things to follow, but I found it compelling, so that's... I favor hospital, orphanage, something along those lines.
Okay.
I definitely thought the hospital was pretty interesting, and I think you can kind of... Like, I think other songs support that theory. I will say, when I first read this, like, when I was first paying attention to the lyrics of the song, I gave very little attention to who I thought those people were supposed to be and just kind of assumed they were supposed to be townspeople. So the hospital theory was just, I heard it and I liked it.
Yeah. Bionic, you got anything?
Just looking at the album picture from the booklet, the wall is like really cracked and there's a pipe on the outside and another pipe going to this window.
It's a lot more urban looking, right?
Great looking thing. This is like probably not the greatest hospital that they're staying at. I don't know. Well, when I originally read it, I didn't even consider the location. In my head, I thought they were just on an island or something with like a single wall in the middle of the island.
They're not in an island, like, boy. They are far away from the ocean.
That's a very kind of, that's kind of a very interesting take, because it's like everything that's outside of like this perspective kind of doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah.
That's cool. So for me, I have kind of a weird take on this, because it's probably not right, but it's just kind of how I feel about it, so it's just kind of what I'm going to roll with. I feel like the people who have all lost something, like all the people who lost something, I don't think that this is a collective. I think that the people who contribute to this graffiti, as I'm going to continue to call it, are just other people who have lost something and are going to this place to add to something. Just kind of like any other graffiti would be, right? Right? Mm-hmm. Where, like, people come and go and they contribute to this piece as time goes on. And the piece starts as, like, it's kind of the boy and the girl creating kind of their dream space, right? And they're able to do that without having lost anything. They're just kind of doing it for fun. But then you have all these people who have come by as time goes on, because we learn that the painting isn't finished. They're not able to finish the painting. I feel like what's happening is that as seasons pass and as time goes on, people come and go and continue to add to what they started. And people are bringing their griefs and they're adding to this piece, right? And it's starting to build into kind of a giant collage, right? And I feel like as everything kind of comes to a head towards the end, I feel like the boy's returned and he's looking at this piece that started, and he sees how time has brought all these different things and all these different people to this piece that had started with him. Even though you have all these people who were doing it because they lost something, even though he hadn't lost anything. And he says, you know, I still was never able to love, so that he's never been able to lose, right? Because it's better to love than to have lost, right? Or it's better to have loved and lost than to never have loved at all, or whatever. I feel like he's somebody who still has never loved, thus he has never lost, and he still sits there now as he's never lost, but he comes back to complete the dream that the two of them had then at that time to create something on their own, and to finish that painting, right? Which is why I feel like this is kind of a future thing. And looking at, you know, the picture, obviously it's the painting of the girl, which we know that they were never able to draw her, right? Because in their past they drew him, but then whenever they decided to start on her, that's when things went wrong, right? So he goes back to draw her and to finish the painting that they wanted to start. And I say that to say this, that basically they wanted to be able to do that without any troubles, and he came there to finish that without all of the inclusion of the other people, which is what I think is important about the idea of the dream that they saw being one without other people, an empty sea, right? Without all the contributions of other people. Like, it's just us, a world that's just about us, right? Which I think fits a lot with the main character's kind of idea of it being about a world that's nothing but him and the person that he loves. Sorry, that was a lot.
Yeah, you got a bit in there. But that's fine. Like, I guess if you want to talk a little bit more about why it's an ocean, that's kind of interesting. Like, the first thing I thought of was, like, it's kind of an expression of some desire of freedom, of wanting to escape from, like, their current reality or whatever. And that really ties into the whole idea that the ocean is far away, so it does represent an ideal for them. But then there's other takes on this. There's, like...
I like to look back at Aonayume a lot, obviously, to, you know, the big blue. I think this is very... It's similar to... I think they even mentioned the sky, I think, as well, because he comes to paint the sky as well. So I feel like it's... The sea and the sky, I feel like, are very... they're just two big blue open places that I think can be interchangeable in this idea of their dream, right?
I'd agree.
Yeah, I think when they talk about the ocean, there's a little bit more vibrance involved than with the sky, though. I really do feel like they usually, just because the sky is empty, I think that comes off when they kind of change how they refer to them.
Yeah, one thing that I really liked about the song is that, one thing about the ocean is that it's colored blue because the sky is usually blue and it reflects the sky, right? So his sky, which is like perhaps his future with this girl, it might be like as if the ocean were to represent his innermost thoughts as what I wanted it, what I interpret it to represent, then because it reflects it, that's like all that he sees is this girl, and that's all that he wants, and that kind of
super
that ties back into Aonayume a little bit with this like obsessive nature that he has.
I like the term reflections a lot, because I feel like it comes up again in another song here, so I feel like it's actually kind of an important piece.
Yeah.
So, do you think, like, he comes at the end of the song, he comes back and he's finally done drawing the sky, but then the song closes on talking about how it was a drawing of a sea with no one in it, the sea that she was aiming for. Do you think the implication really is that the ocean kind of became a sky? That was kind of the feeling I got from reading that.
Huh. Ooh, I like that. I really don't know. It's a very good interpretation, though.
Looking at this last stanza, it almost feels like, to me, that the term sky and sea, maybe I'm wrong, but they almost feel interchangeable.
Right.
There isn't really a clear transition from sea to sky. He even goes back to referring it as a sea in the last line. And even the phrasing of the first line of this last stanza, why am I crying when I'm finally done drawing the sky, I'm not sure if the objective really changed, or if maybe the use of the term sky reflects a change in perspective he has on the drawing. It's not really a fully developed idea, but I just noticed that I'm sure the use of the term sky is important, but it only comes up once. And I want to think that there is something more to it, but I can't really make a connection to this to it earlier, since maybe the term is only used once.
Maybe it'll come up somewhere else. You never know. We're not there. We're not through the whole album yet.
All right, so let's move on to Hayao no Hane, Grey Wings. This is a much more abstract song than the last one, I feel. There's a lot going on here where I first listened to it, I'm just like, I have no idea what the fuck.
From, like, my first impression of the song is that, like, I don't think it's too abstract in, like, what exactly is going on, so to speak. But more like it's abstract in, like, what it's talking about. Like, what the actual subject matter is, I feel like, is a lot harder to kind of derive from this. Like, I feel like looking at it literally, it's pretty easy to kind of, like, come up with something, but, like, trying to think about what it all means is definitely a lot more interesting.
I think especially just in context of the rest of the album is, because as a song on its own, it's nice and fairly easy to follow, but if you start thinking of it in context with everything around it, you start trying to put more pieces together, and there's honestly quite a few, like, things that harken back to other songs.
Yeah, it's definitely an overarching story kind of forming through this stuff.
Yeah, the piece.
I feel like these songs are adding. I feel like if the first four songs were, like, talking about just an event that had happened, I feel like these songs are adding context to what those things were. Like, this is explaining the story, like, what happened, you know what I mean?
That's true, because in track one, he refers rather vaguely to what feel like a number of events, a number of things and experiences they shared, without really going into detail. And you got a couple different perspectives in those first five tracks, but not a lot of specific events, really. But now we're going into these new tracks, and yeah, I'm just repeating you at this point. I apologize.
That's good. It's good. Affirmation is good. So, this story. So, looking at it literally, I guess, just throwing it out there, would y'all rate this one again?
4.
I rated it a 3. I do not like the sound of the lyrics, but I would love to just listen to the composition of the song.
Oh, the music in this track is really, really good. There's a lot of stuff going on here. This is the track, at the very beginning of this, I mentioned that there were obviously, other musicians that came in to do some performance and stuff on these tracks. This track specifically has two of them, one being, Weisshorst, and the other one being Achilles Ken did, respectively the violin and the percussion on this, and there's a lot of percussion work on here.
That violin was so good.
Like, a whole lot of stuff going on, and yeah, the violin's beautiful. There's a really, really, really cool kind of progression going on here, especially, I want to point out, since we're talking about music right now, I really want to talk out, whenever she's going through her, the ah, so, okay, blah, blah, and the ah, ah, all the ahs, basically, as this is progressing, like, there's towards the end, the violin starts to build up, it's like, getting louder and louder and louder and louder and louder with each line, and it's like really building up this kind of anxious feeling, and then right at the last line it just cuts off, and it just stops making noise, and she says ah sono yume wo mitenda bokura, so she mentions the dream again, so I feel like that silence is always, I like how they're always, the composition is always bringing back to that word dream a lot, because obviously that's quite important. I think we can all agree the dream is something important at this point.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I know. Like, this song really starts feeling like we're beginning to get a bigger picture. Like, all the pieces are kind of falling together for the broader love song. But let's talk about that, more about the content of the lyrics itself. There's a lot of interesting stuff here. I guess the main point you can kind of take from it is the wall, and how that's kind of like separating two people who can't connect for some reason.
This song took me a tremendous way longer than it needed.
I spent a long time talking to Felios and was still not sure about it.
I will admit. I think one of the reasons that's going to plague this song being really difficult to try to decipher is because I feel like it is using an idea that is extremely hard to pinpoint what it means. Like, it's something that's very vague, and because of that, it is intentionally opening up a lot of interpretations to the point where I feel like it's extremely difficult to actually pinpoint what it is. I feel like it does that on purpose because it wants the listener to try to pull out their own interpretation of what. What
that was my first impression of the song.
The eyes, everywhere.
Because it was literally the question that I had to ask myself first. I was like, okay, so whose eyes are they talking about, and what the hell do they mean? Like, I was immediately like, I was trying to figure out. I was like, all right, this is what I need to look at more than anything else. Is what are the eyes talking about? But that's way more conceptual. As far as what the song itself is about, as we've pretty much got the gist of it, it's a story of two people who are separated by a wall, and there's kind of looking at it literally, of course, maybe it's not a literal wall, who knows, it probably is though. I think everyone kind of came to the conclusion that it's probably talking about something literal. Maybe not so far-fetched as, like, a giant brick wall between two people in a room or something, but, like, we'll get there. I think it could be taken multiple ways, which, again, like I said, it's just a very broad, kind of vague song.
The eyes a bit, but I think what makes the song tricky to follow is it's kind of juggling two narratives. We have the boy's story, but then we get some insight on what the girl's thinking too, but it's a bit vaguer, perhaps. Like, a lot of the boy's segments feel like they're describing his actions, while the girls were more describing feelings or sensations. This pair right here, the girl, while drawing water, saw her swaying self. Right. Like, that captivated me, but just looking at it literally, it doesn't mean
much. We're finally getting into the third-person narrator, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely. This song is freaking crazy as far as, like, what these lyrics are talking about. And I have scribbled tons of different kind of interpretations, but I have one down, and, like, I can point out different possible interpretations, but I'm gonna just try to squeeze everything into one succinct statement without it being too long, I promise. The most important part of this song is obviously the eyes, for me, and, like, I started kind of my thought process with the idea of the eyes are the window to the soul, and like what is perception and what is appearance and like what are different things that you can attribute, like, or you can connect with eyes, right?
In Japanese culture, eyes are very important. That Helios pointed out, it's kind of like how eyes are sort of a way of like looking at a person's demeanor.
Yes.
And just describing how a person is, I guess.
And I think that's important because I feel like what these two characters are doing is it's explaining us stuff from, like, kind of looking at the girl and what she's doing and what she's looking at, and then also the boy and what he's looking at and how he sees things. And so you have kind of a juggling of perceptions here where you're trying to figure out, like, what does everything really mean? Like, when someone is looking at something, you have to think about, like, what is it really... What does them looking at it mean? Like, what are they looking at it about, I guess? So, like, the idea of the pitiful eyes, like, grammatically, I'm trying to think of, like, okay, so...
Yeah, like, I think Helios talked about this, too. It's kind of hard to translate, because we don't know if it's pitying eyes or pitiful eyes is kind of ambiguous in Japanese.
So, like, okay, if she is looking at him with pitiful eyes, is she looking at him as if, like, does she take pity on him, or are her eyes pitiful? You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, and I think that is intentionally vague. Like, I feel like you're meant to try to think about what are these characters thinking. So, that whole conversation between, like, them looking at each other, and then them looking at themselves, and then the way that he looks at her looking at herself, like, it's kind of this crazy cycle of, what does this all mean? And I tried to, like, kind of piece a little puzzle together to, like, how can I make sense of this, basically. And what I came up with is, so, it could be that her eyes look pitiful, or she looks at him with pity. I think it's the latter. I think that she is looking at him with pity. I don't think that he's perceiving it that way, though. Like, I think he's looking at her and seeing a girl with pitiful eyes, but it's that she is looking at him with pity, right? Okay. So, whenever she draws water, I guess she's at a sink or something, or maybe more literally looking at, like, a pool, like a well of water or something. But basically, she sees her own reflection. And she sees pitiful eyes, right? So is she judging herself and saying that, or is she looking at herself in pity? Those are the two things that I had there. I think that the boy thinks that she's looking at herself in pity, whereas she is thinking that she looks pitiful, as I think is happening. So you have two kind of interpretations here going at the same time. I think they're both important.
Actually, I have to ask for a little bit of clarification there, because when they used the verb pitying in this song, the line is, those eyes were pitying him. The next mention we have of eyes is a couple stanzas down, where they say, after she sees her swaying self, presumably in the water, they say, she's making a compassionate eyes, but he doesn't mind. I'm not sure if we actually see the girl
there
herself.
Are no, yeah, what Helios says is true. There are no subjects. Like I said, I think it's intentionally vague. Yeah, you have to interpret it. Whenever they translated it to compassionate, I looked at that very closely, and the actual word didn't change, so I feel like they kind of took a liberty there and changed it compassionate. It's because it's the same word. It's the same one that is defined as pitiable. Abaranda, yeah. It's the same word, so that didn't change.
Okay.
But the translation changed that, and I drew very specific attention to it. I actually made a post on the forum about it, because I feel like that was a mistake, because I think it's important that it's the same word, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it just doesn't sound that good in English, I guess.
Yeah, because our English translations have all these different connotations. Like,
right,
the difference
right.
between pity and compassion is enormous in English, but it's, like, in Japanese, they pretty much use the same word.
Right. I feel like it was kind of trying to piece together, like, a romance aspect, but I don't think that that's... The romance is more kind of in the air, as opposed to something more literal here. But the last little bit that's important is he says that he's going to live with the same eyes, right? And I feel like that asks the question of, is he taking on her expression of pity for themselves in their situation because he thinks that she's pitying herself? Or does he now look pitiful because of the experience and the anxiety is now draining on him as well, right? Like, she may look pitiful just because she's sick, but not because of how she feels. Like, she may feel pity towards him, but if the girl is sick, dialing it back real quick, no, I'll finish this real quick. Basically, I think that he is now taking on those same anxieties that she has, but she doesn't necessarily have that anxiety. She just looks sick, but he is perceiving that she is exhibiting an anxiety because of the stress of her situation, and he's misrepresenting, so basically he's spaghettiing all over the place and not actually understanding the situation, and he's coming to an assumption, because that's how perceptions work, because we are all locked in our own minds, and we don't actually know how each other feel, we can only think about what things look like to us, right?
I think that might be the central theme of this story.
Yes.
That is depressing as heck.
I feel like that is why I feel like the vagueness is really important, because it's all kind of coming together where it's like, you know what? This is a hell of a lot like our perceptions of one another. Well, we don't freaking know. Like, yeah. we're making assumptions. Yeah. We're interpreting it in our own way. And I feel like that is exactly what the song does.
It's the wall, man. It's
brilliant.
The wall.
It's... brilliant lyricism.
The wall is a metaphor, dude. It's,
yeah.
Absolutely.
That would connect to how he tries to climb over the wall, but they never actually say he mm-hmm. does.
I think the walls and the eyes are both probably real and metaphorical in this song. The walls are very well.
Absolutely correct.
I think they support the idea of almost the hospital setting again, I feel like.
Yep.
But it also very much has the concept of, like, people not being able to reach each other or communicate with each other or know each other. And eyes are the same way. They both reflect who the people are for real and are possibly the eyes that these characters in the song are actually making, but they have the greater meaning of how they come to understand each other.
Oh, this is a good song.
It's a good song.
That's a perfect interpretation. Like, I think that's exactly how I feel about it. I feel like, going to the setting really quick, I feel like, I didn't feel like the last song, I just said I feel like a lot, the last song wasn't a hospital, I still don't really think that it was. I feel like what happened in our timeline here, we're gonna go to this timeline, this magical timeline, that no one can see, they were doing the painting.
So is this in the timeline where the girl dies, the girl lives?
Shut up. They're at the wall painting, and they want to finish their painting, right? But the girl gets sick and now gets sent to an institution, and the wall is the wall between the boy and the girl in the institution, right? So now they're separated, and she's in a hospital now. Like, I feel like the hospital was important, but I feel like it takes place here and not in the previous song. As to what is actually wrong with her, I don't know.
Guys... Last episode, we didn't talk about the bandages on her arm.
Oh, the bandages.
She has bandages on her arm in the...
Who's this that I'm connected this to the possibility of self-harm?
Picture of, in Boku no Koi, right?
Yeah.
Anyways, going back to what I was
Damn
saying.
Damn it, though, I was trying to make the point.
I know, but I'm trying to finish mine. Is, like, right, I wanted to bring up the question as to what is actually wrong with her. Like, is, like, if it's, like, what you're bringing up, self-harm, right? Do you think that she's suicidal? I wouldn't agree with that, but that's an interesting idea. I feel like the bandages are, like, maybe she was getting treatments for something. So maybe she's got a bandaged arm because of, like, injections and things.
That's another possibility.
Again, it's all open to interpretation. That's kind of how I see it. But I wanted to ask the question is, like, what do you think's actually wrong with her? Like, if they're separated by glass, it brings up this idea of, like, her being quarantined, right? Like, is she, like, being kept away from people? Like, what she has, is it contagious? Like, it's interesting to ponder about.
Oh, I have two things about this. The first one is that I think that the fact that the bandage goes like all the way her arm and basically covers her entire forearm, it kind of like you when you get injections in that part of your arm, it's usually for like IV and medicine delivery, and like they just use a tiny needle for that.
Yeah, you're right.
You just like stick a Band-Aid on it. Uh-huh. Like the excessive bandage part. So that I think that clues into the self-harm thing. Just a little bit.
Looking at this picture, it doesn't... I don't know.
The picture, I think, one thing I'm noticing looking at it now, too, is that the red that they talk about...
It's like behind
is
her
very
head.
Possibly the red right behind her head in the sky.
Yeah.
So, like, the fact that the red surrounds her, I feel is significant to the narrative of her... I don't know if I necessarily think self-harm at this point, but...
I had some crazy idea, just throwing out some, like, because obviously I think about this crap way too much. I was throwing around, like, dumb ideas about, like, whenever, like, she starts painting and then all of a sudden it's covered in red. I was like, oh, did she, like, get hit by a car or something? And, like, I was, like, trying to think of, like, what the hell just happened? Like, it sounded like it was something abrupt, right? Because I was questioning, like, what the hell does the red mean?
I just thought of something right now. Like, this is back to, like, the self-harm thing. Like, if she was, like, every time she draws, the painting gets covered in red. If she had cut her wrist and then she, like, drawing strains her hand, maybe the cut reopens every time she tries drawing.
Okay.
And then,
Wasn't there something about red fingertips?
Oh yeah, there's red fingertips.
Oh, the red hands?
Not Ishii.
Right. Yeah. Track 3, I think. Yep.
Interesting.
Oh, so man,
this is a cool idea. Oh, shit.
Okay. So it also ends with her, like, if that's her blood on the sky, and it was the ocean she was aiming for, which is the sky he finished drawing at the end, that also, I think, kind of plays into the self-harm theory in that, you know, she wanted to kill herself. She was aiming for it.
Oh, this is good shit. Okay. Okay. Like, what's interesting about the red hands thing, and like just taking this and then applying it to everything that we've read about so far, this is bringing in a really cool idea of like this boy is always looking at her like she's like, because we talked about the idea as he explained to us in the song. As she was somebody who was always, like, forward-thinking and seemed like a go-getter kind of person, but that's just his interpretation of her, and maybe it's not the actuality. Like, maybe she's... Maybe she is a much more tragic person, and this is just his... He's just making an assumption based on, like, just meeting the person, right? He doesn't actually know about
them. In
that
song, he does mention bearing through anxiety with both
right.
of them. So maybe that wasn't an external conflict like I would have assumed back when I wrote about that song, but maybe it more had to do with her and he just didn't
know. Like maybe it's...
He does mention having to go look for the pebble himself at the end.
Oh, this is cool. Realizations. I love this shit. Okay. Okay.
Can we talk That's about good. The picture? I have a question about it. The girl is sorrowfully looking at the window. Is she looking at a reflection of herself, or is she looking at the boy?
Why not both?
So, ¿por qué no los dos? Okay, what's super interesting about that is, you mentioned reflections, is that I didn't get into this because I didn't want to make my interpretations of the eyes thing go way too far, but I was thinking of the idea, if you're looking at somebody in the eyes through glass... What if you're actually just looking at the reflection of your own eyes? What if the boy's eyes were pitiful all along?
Oh, God.
You know what I mean? Like, like I didn't want to go too far into it, but since you mentioned it, this could go a lot of ways.
Nah, this fucking song.
That's why I said this song is crazy.
I guess, I don't know if I want to include this, but... Like, the whole point about the boy being in a room without a window, did you have any interpretations of that?
He's in a padded room.
He's crazy. He's crazy.
Yeah, oh, man. Like yeah, that's what I considered
literal.
That as Helios.
Actually,
I did.
I thought of that as well, actually. I know somebody mentioned a coffin.
Yeah, that's
also a pretty good idea. But I actually came to the conclusion of somebody being crazy. I was like, huh, that would be quite interesting.
Oh, no. Okay, guys. Did you have any last thoughts about this song?
I don't know. I don't really think he's crazy. Like, the idea came to mind, but it's like, there's not a lot that really clues him into being, like, insane.
I don't think that's the case either, but it is something that came to my mind. I feel like without windows, I interpreted that, I ended up interpreting that as, like, he's closed off from the world. Like, he no longer looks to the sky or looks outside. Like, everything is closed off to him because I feel like he's in a state of extreme depression, basically.
Yeah, that could be another way of looking at it.
I looked at it more metaphorically.
Okay, so I guess we should move on to something completely different with Gramophone.
No!
We got folktales!
What if... I was just thinking, what if this is connected to him being crazy?
Oh my god. You've ruined love song forever.
But let's not get into that too deeply. What do you guys
want to hear?
This?
Crazy? Yeah. Never mind. So, what did I rate Gramophone? Let's see here. Probably, yeah. I did what I thought I did.
What'd you think you'd do? You gave it a 5.
Of course I did. The song is awesome.
I gave it a 4.
I gave it a 3 out of spite.
Oh.
I couldn't make much sense of, like, if the whole story of the gramophone and his waifu was supposed to be metaphorical, or if there's supposed to be some literalness to it. Was there a historical parallel?
Well, hey,
it bugged
what's
me a
all
lot.
Folklore about? I mean, it's a fairy tale. Like, it's something that is very obviously kind of crazy. It doesn't really make much sense. But it's explaining something morally. It's explaining something. Like, it's important. Like, obviously it wouldn't just be here to make no sense. It's obviously things are connected.
Yeah.
To me, it sounded like a retelling of Aonoyume, where you have this one thing, I guess, the personified gramophone, who builds arms to try to be like the girl mentioned in Gramophone. So he's trying to change... The gramophone is trying to change itself to be like... something that it's aspiring to.
Okay.
But
it's still just
that's just
gramophone.
Like, yeah. That's like Aonoyume, where the person is like starting to obsess over someone else.
Okay. What did you rate it? 4?
I gave it a 4.
Miu?
I gave it a 3.
Okay. I guess that's kind of fair. Ask me, what about you?
4.
Alright. Those are all good. The song is definitely not very... It's definitely not very music-y. It's very artsy. This is a very artsy kind of song. There's, like... I cannot even begin to go into details of what it's doing musically. All I can say is just listen to it. All the pops and the creaks and, like, kind of... It's very reminiscent of something like a gramophone recording that just kind of... It's a recording, but it just kind of sounds like shit. But not exactly... Doesn't necessarily have the same finesse as a vinyl. This is kind of old school, you know. If you've ever listened to anything, there's a "They Might Be Giant" song that they recorded on a gramophone. It's really funny. anyways, so I guess just to speed through what the hell the story actually is, literally. Basically, this is like a proper folk tale. We've got a story of a gramophone. Who is being sung to by some lady, and he just loves the lady, the singer, so much that he freaking grows arms because he wants to be able to hold his beloved. they're together for 10 years of recording and this and that and the other thing, and then lo and behold, war comes, freaking kills his waifu, and he falls into anguish and destroys himself with his own arms, holding... all that is left of their cherished memories in his hands, the memories being the recording of her voice that he will never be able to perfectly replicate, but at least they're memories, right?
If I want to say one thing about the picture, it's that the gramophone is doing, like, the friend zone arm thing, where it's, like, not actually hugging
the
thing.
It's like an awkward, like, lean.
Oh, no. Poor gramophone.
Anyway. The gramophone's kind of cute, let's be honest. Anyways.
Is there an element of self-harm in this song?
I mean, yeah.
The first line of the last stanza, yeah. Destroyed itself, was yeah. that... Does that likely have anything to do with the previous song, or is this probably just self-contained?
So, Miu brought up an excellent point about this song that I definitely want to talk about in a second, but this song is leaves me with a sense of foreboding, because it's kind of fucked up. Because, obviously, we can only attribute this to our characters, right? And that doesn't sound good at all.
Yeah.
Anyways. Miva brings up a super interesting point, because we're going to go ahead and talk about... basically raise the question of who's who. You have the boy and the girl in our story, as we know so far, and then we have the singer and the gramophone. So is the boy the gramophone, or is he the singer? Is the girl the gramophone? What? What do you guys think?
The girl kind of resembles the girl in the other songs. At least a lot of them.
In terms of
the illustrations.
Maybe. Just looking at how they act, right? Like, the gramophone loves the girl, right? And then in a lot of the other songs you have, like, the singer loves another person. So following that pattern, I guess the gramophone is the guy from a few of the other songs.
That's more or less the decision that I came to. Like, the gramophone definitely makes a big point of how it's not capable of perfectly relaying the singer's voice, because it's not going to be the same, right? So I feel like it kind of touting about its imperfections and its extreme willpower to freaking grow arms to be with the girl. I feel like it feels like it's supposed to be our guy character.
It could be going back to the whole point of how he's unable to love and he wants to.
Right. But it's just he's just a gramophone. And all he can do is hold the memories of his beloved. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much the gist of the song for me. Like, I don't really have much more to say about it other than that, like, it's very interesting to listen to. It's a lot of fun.
Why is it a gramophone? I don't know.
That's a good question. I don't know.
They're atmospheric and cool.
Yeah. It's definitely very... And it fits.
There is... I mentioned this in the forum. There is apparently a Japanese legend about gramophones.
Oh my.
Where after 100 years of existing, they become self-aware.
Oh boy, here we go.
I wasn't able to find that anywhere, so I'm just really curious if, like... there's, like, a written thing I could read about this somewhere.
Shit, we didn't do our research, guys.
Okay, so, to explain, my older brother's a history major, and he's really into Asian history. That was his field of study.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And he mentioned this to... We were talking about this song in particular, because I was, like, friggin' confused by it first time I read the lyrics. And... So, what likely happened is, it's probably what Helios is saying, it's probably something you might see about inanimate objects.
Now, okay,
broadly.
You mentioned why a gramophone. I would say, I feel like it makes sense in the context of A, being a folktale, because folktales still just are always kind of an old-timey kind of thing, regardless of what generation you're in, it always kind of sounds like something from a far-gone day. Something as archaic as a gramophone fits pretty nicely. And the idea of the gramophone being very not good, especially compared to modern standards, which obviously it's being written in modern times. Looking back on something like gramophone is pretty bad at recording and relaying a sound, which again fits pretty nicely to portray the idea of you can't recreate that. You can just hold it.
Closing thoughts about this one?
Like I said, just it poses a lot of questions, because we know that this is important, and so all I can think about is it's foreboding. That's the only word I can think of. Like, that doesn't sound very nice.
It doesn't. I mean, considering,
I think it was pretty cool.
I mean, we already know that the boy is kind of tearing himself up over the incident.
I mean, we know the girl's dead. At least, well, we can assume the girl's dead, so...
Mm-hmm.
Don't sound too good.
Moving on to the next song, we have Shinwa.
Shinwa!
Also known as Myth. This one felt like something out of Zen. Post-rock, okay. Man.
Sure. It yeah, okay, fine. Fair.
Kind of post-rocky. I rated it... What did I rate it? I rated it 4.
I gave this one a 5 because this song jams. I love when this song comes on shuffle.
It is pretty jamming. But I have no idea what to make of the lyrics.
It was a 4 as well.
Same.
Sorry, I really like this album.
Alright, so... I guess there's a story here.
I guess.
Theoretically.
I want to go ahead and throw out some words about the music itself, because I think that it's going to be very helpful in describing what this song is about. The drum track in this, and the specific tone that they use for the synth and the keyboard, gives me a huge feeling of a heartbeat. It sounds like the drum is like boom boom boom, like it's like a heartbeat. And
you think she's dead in this
song?
And
the keyboard is, it reminds me of a cardiograph. Like, so I feel like Dongo, I'm pretty sure you made a pretty good post on this one, right? I think it was you. Pretty elaborate post, yeah.
I think mine's decent.
Because
there's also Helios.
You mentioned in your post the idea of this being like the girl in a state of dying, basically, is kind of what you said, I believe. And I think that is exactly on the money with what this song is portraying.
I can feel that
agree with you.
This sounds like the boy is like pretty much panicking because his girl's about to die. I can feel that in the music.
There's a, like, the music here is like, even though it's like kind of rocky, it's almost like kind of that kind of sad kind of ballady rock. Like I feel like it drones, even though it is kind of like it has a lot of distortion that kind of fades in and out. It's like kind of like it's got a little bit of anger in there, but at the same time, it's very subdued because it, like, the distortion will come in and it'll be like and then it just kind of, it'll go back to being flat again, right? Like, I feel like it kind of bounces around. It does again give that kind of feeling of anxiety, but at the same time, it gives this kind of feeling of it's like a hypnagogic kind of state where like you're like in between being asleep and being awake. Like, it gives this kind of disillusioned, adrift kind of feeling, especially in the lyrics. Like, I feel like everything is like, it feels like a person who's just barely awake, just kind of rambling thoughts. You know what I mean?
It brings me back to a certain scene from Clannad After Story.
Yeah, there you go.
That's basically the same
big
sort of feeling
vibes,
from this song.
Big vibes from the song on that. Mm. Yep.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you. I mean, like, if you talk about the lyrics, it's pretty much, it almost sounds like a sort of a myth. Well, it is a myth. That's fucking Shinwa. About, like, anyway, like, it's kind of like a creation myth, but also, like, almost biblical. Sort of like,
I feel like
the end of the world sort of stuff going on.
Yeah, and it feels biblical in a sense of where, like, it's still kind of, it's still kind of folktale-y, but it's definitely not a gramophone folktale-y. Like, it's like kind of in between that and reality, and I feel like that kind of narrative fits really well with that idea of a person who's like in between life and death. Like, yeah, I feel like that it culminates really well. Like, this song and the last, like, a lot of these songs are just really good lyricism and stuff that just, I feel like all of the mood of the track is right on point.
Mm-hmm.
there's definitely a finality with this song. I just noticed a line that I think connects pretty well to tracks we just talked about. Near the end, it says, "The dream drawn by the pale hands, let it disappear along with the swirl." That's, I have to assume he's definitely talking about the girl there.
Yep.
And the painting.
And the dream she's had.
I have
the
it.
The pale hands.
Or her hands.
Connects to that whole. Yeah. It connects to that. It could also potentially connect to that whole image of her being sickly, perhaps.
Yes.
That's how I saw it. Because I put, like, the pale hands are the hands of the girl. And she drew the dreams that are the dreams of the boy. Like their dreams of them being together. And it's saying to let it disappear because, well, it's over, right? And let it be told as a myth in a world far away. Like, let this be told as a bygone story. It's over. You know what I mean? And there's a lot of repeated terminology from previous tracks here where we start talking about a lot of really... It's kind of a cool progression where, like, it feels like you're in the perspective of the girl, right? And she's naming all of these different bits of nature of the world that's kind of going around her. So you have, like, the wind, right? But the wind stopped. The wind stops blowing. Let it disappear with this world. And, like, it says that she'll take that with her to the, like, in the ground, like, in the cold ground, and it'll stay there. Where it's, like, that feeling of wind is, it's gonna stay with her, right? Like, the, that memory is gonna stay with her. Like, it's something that's gonna stick as a part of her character. And then you have the summer, and we're going back to our timeline again, where we have obviously the three main seasons, which is just one summer where these characters are together, where you have the spring where they meet, the summer where they're together, and then the winter where it's over. And she is naming the heat summer and specifies that it's scorched, like it's a scorching heat, which is like kind of the idea of like, oh my god, like it's like that tired sun's beating down on you, like kind of heat. You know what I mean?
Nah.
It's very negative. It's a very harsh word.
That negative description of summer, wasn't that in the Pebble song too?
Mm-hmm.
I think
summer keeps coming up actually.
Because it was like spring was happy, and then the summer heat like beat down on you, and then cold was like alone, was how he described each of the seasons. But so since everything is going away, just let it all go away, is kind of the gist of this. Like, it's just kind of like, throw your hands up, you know, it's done, kind of feeling. Well, the lyrics, they do come together because it takes, it mentions, like, you have the passage of time through seasons, and then you have the idea of wind, but then she takes the idea of wind moving the clouds, and it's being referred to as, like, the passage of time, right?
Yep.
And it specifies that the clouds aren't going to move anymore. And it says, it's really rough translation here. It said... the wind moved the large clouds, the girl named it timed, it won't move anymore, stopping this world, enclosing the courage from being born, even that one warmth, was something that I had to look at for a while, because I was just like, whoa, English. and what I derived from that was that courage can't be born if you don't revere the passage of time. Like, if you just sit and let time pass, then courage is never going to... You're never going to have the courage to, like, accept something or...
Are you sure we're not talking about being born in terms of birth?
I did not view it that way. Probably could, but that's just not how I saw it.
Maybe Helios can weigh on this. But yeah, I don't know. I kind of took that as a sort of, like, Litterbuster's living means losing sort of mentality. Which is what the character is kind of going through at the moment.
Yeah.
But then kind of try and finding the courage of being born despite having to go through all that pain. I don't know whether that's talking about the girl or the boy, but yeah.
But so, like, I like I said, I just took it as, like, saying that you're not going to be able to become anything if you don't accept that, you know, the world goes on. It goes on to say that, like, the dream drawn by the pale hands, blah blah blah. Basically, something that she created within him.
Maybe it's like the protagonist is angry that this girl was born and lived such a short life, but she still had courage. Like, he sort of admires that, but he's angry about it.
Let it disappear with this world is super cynical. It's like, let it disappear with this world is like, it's like saying, let the memory of this time just be gone. Like, it's very much just kind of a, pardon my French, it's just like, fuck it. Like, it's not even worth it. You know, it's very cynical. And like, when it specifies that, even that one warmth, despite, like, even when it mentions courage, and not being able to, like, step up for something, it says, even that one warmth, I feel like the warmth is love, right? So it's saying that, like, even if you're gonna try to find love or something, if you're not gonna be courageous and if you're not gonna live your life, then it's not gonna amount to anything. Like, mm-hmm. is basically what I got from it.
It feels like me and Biz are still in this one.
Needless to say, at this point, this song is emotionally intense.
Yes.
And one pair of lines that I think stuck out to me because it really displays how emotional this is by drawing on a recurring theme in previous songs. And it's this pair of lines right before we get to the part where the wind's moving clouds. If it's a dream too painful to watch, it's going to be for a little while longer.
Ugh.
Like, it's getting to the point where the singer is actively coping, contemplating, maybe this is just all in my head.
I feel like that's from the perspective of, like, it's like a mixed thing. Like, I feel like I took it as, like, the perspective of the girl, right? Because she says it's gonna be for a little while longer, and I feel like that sticks really, really heavily with the idea of how this feels like time passing before someone dies and, like, just basically waiting for death.
That's true.
Because it says that after the, this line is super confusing. Did anyone get anything out of this? Pale arms, the flowing clouds, so you have, moving time. Time is still moving at this point. And, obviously, her pale arms are there. It says, the dream of bloodstream in her sleep. What the fuck does that mean?
I couldn't make much of that. My assumption was just that something to do with the fact she's just, like, feeling... Like you basically said, she's feeling the life draining away from her body. She can even, like, feel her blood course through her. She's that sick, that weak.
I likened the mention of blood flow to just a heartbeat. Like, her heart's still beating. And she's fading away into a dream, so she's fading away to sleep while her heart's still beating, and she's gonna have a dream of the happy times that weren't able to become, and it's too painful to watch, but she has to deal with it because she's not dead yet. This song is really fucking sad.
Yeah.
In my interpretation.
So many of these are.
This album's really fucking sad, isn't it?
Did you want to talk about the ending?
Wait, I have a thing. If you want to play into the back into the self-harm theory, right? Like, if you have a lack of blood, you will be pale. And then there's the pale arms in this song. And then how she's dreaming about the bloodstream. Maybe she, like, she wants to come back to life? Because maybe she's already dead.
Oh, it's even more sad.
I don't know. This just popped into my head just now.
I feel like the song ends with her dying, to be honest.
I think in the second to last stanza is when she dies. When time stops. I feel like that's when she dies. And then the even now she's still here is back to present time in our protagonist's mind, where he's saying that her memory still lives on in his dream. She's forever watching the mild and warm dream because she is still a part of him, right? Because her memory still remains with him. Basically, it's like the idea of, you know, you're never really dead because you live on in someone else's heart.
And if we go back to Gramophone, the arms collecting the memories.
Booyah!
Yep, it all comes back there. But I just love how, like, the instrument's kind of, like, I don't know how you describe it, but it just kind of all drops at the end there.
Yes. I did write about that. I mean, you're right. Like, the way that it's... There's definitely a lot of common usage of abrupt endings, like, with a realization. Mm-hmm. And with the stopping of music, honestly, that fits pretty nicely with the fact that the whole song is kind of like a heartbeat that's kind of going up and down and fading in and out, and then it's gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
absolutely.
Actually,
I have a whole new appreciation of this song now. This is great.
I remember Helios mentioning something a little strange on the forum that I kind of want to bring up too. I'm also confused by it. After the mention of the pale hand, the dream drum of the pale hands that disappear along with this world, there's this thing about it being told as a myth on a planet far, far away. Helios wasn't 100% what that meant.
Oh, yeah,
sure
that.
Back
to this planet thing.
I mentioned it.
It's important because it's a title drop. We do see the word myth here, but I don't know.
I viewed it as... Because obviously the myth is the focal point of the song. Is that, like, love is just a myth. and it's... I feel like it's... What it's saying is... It goes back to that cynicism of everything's going away, and so now it's just going to be told as some long-gone story, and it's not going to... Like, maybe it'll mean something to someone else.
Like
maybe this album is the story.
Like gramophone, maybe? Gramophone is kind of their recorded memories. It's their story becoming a myth, like a folk tale.
True, and that is, I guess, what you could consider the record, like the memories. Let it be found by someone else in a far gone time. Maybe they'll find something of it.
And Maida happened to write about it. Thanks, Maida.
Fuck you, Maida. I love you.
Alright, well, I think that's probably a wrap for this podcast. I'm glad we got a lot of interesting discussion out of that. No, it's okay. You're pretty much the host of this podcast, Piz. But yeah, like, I got a lot more out of these songs than I was expecting to coming in, so that's
so did
awesome.
I.
Yeah, we're all learning shit here.
I really, really like this idea of, like, her character not actually being someone so wonderful.
Admirable.
I really like that idea, and it just never occurred to me.
Yeah, no, that definitely is stunning gel for me now. But, just...
Fucking fits really well.
Anybody listening to this, please, like, share your thoughts in the forum. We'd love to know what you think of this album, if you agree or disagree. If you have a different alternative explanation of certain things, then we'd love to hear it. That's kind of, like, keeping the discussion alive. And shout-outs to forum member Cheska for producing yet another awesome fan art. This one was for Bokura no Koi.
Super good!
She described how she went into the drawing expecting it to be, like, you know, happy, but then the more she listened to the song, the more gloomy it got, so it kind of became darker, which is really
so
cool. Cheska, thank you so much.
Sometimes I wonder if she should have done the illustrations for these.
Wow, there you go.
We'll get to talk about the illustrations. I want to have, like, a good long talk about the illustrations whenever we're actually done with the album.
Yeah,
there's
absolutely
some interesting things to say about them for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, shout out to our forums for all the discussion. I know Shiketsuki Mio, Danga Daikazuku, Bionic, and Helios were some of the more prominent faces there.
So shout outs to Helios, because everyone else is on the podcast right now.
That's awesome, and thanks so much for that. Next week we're concluding Love Song, which is sad, so sad.
Maybe it's not as sad as you think.
And after that we're going to be going into a Love Song. So let's get that last round of discussion out before the final podcast for Love Song, and yeah, I'm very excited to see what turns up. So thank you once again for joining us, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
Sayonara.
Bye.
Bye-bye.